Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. In the early part of the 20th century, the center of English language modernist literature was not anywhere to be found in America, or even Great Britain for that matter, but in Paris, among the lost generation, and an English language bookstore on Paris's left bank. The bookstore and lending library Shakespeare and Company attracted writers as diverse as James Joyce and Ernest Hemingway, Ezra Pound, or F. Scott Fitzgerald, to name but just a few. Created by American expatriate Sylvia Beach, Shakespeare and Company served as a bookshop, a publisher, a salon, and a gathering place for all sorts of writers, artists, and creative types. It even served as a post office for itinerant writers moving from flat to flat throughout Paris. And Beach was the first publisher of James Joyce's modernist masterpiece, Ulysses, which was banned in the United States and Britain for being obscene. Historical novelist Carrie Mayer recreates the world and atmosphere surrounding this literary hub and gives us insight into Sylvia Beach's life, her motivations, and her love with fellow bookstore owner Adrien Monnier in her new book, The Paris Bookseller. This is Mayer's third novel involving real-life protagonists. Her earlier books featured Kathleen Kennedy, the sister of John F. Kennedy, in The Kennedy Debutante, and Grace Kelly in The Girl in White Gloves. The Paris Bookseller is published by Berkeley, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Carrie Mayer, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, you've written about Kathleen Kennedy and Grace Kelly in your previous two historical novels, and now Sylvia Beach. And of course, you know, literary scholars have dissected every nugget of that particular time period. What inspired you to write about this interesting woman at the heart of the American expatriates in Paris in the 20s?
Well, you know, I've been carrying Sylvia's story around in my heart and mind for more than half of my life. When I was an undergraduate in college, I was an English major obsessed with the 1920s. You know, I took all the classes I could that were had to do with this time period. And, you know, one day I was wandering around, you know, the used book bins in front of college bookstores with, you know, bargain books for like a dollar. I happened to just pull Sylvia's own memoir out of one of those one day. I read the back and I saw that it was about Paris in the 20s. And I thought, oh, I have to read this. So I brought it home and I read it and I was just enthralled by her story. You know, I can't remember whether or not I had heard of Shakespeare and Company at that point in my life, but it was certainly on my radar from that point forward. And I was just, I just loved this idea that this bookstore had been a hub, a home away from home for these so-called lost generation of writers in the 1920s. And I, at the time, I just kind of filed it away in my mind under good to know. Fast forward 20 plus years, and, you know, I've written the other two books about Kathleen Kennedy, then Grace Kelly, and I was thinking about who I might want to write about next, and I very quickly homed in on Sylvia Beach. And when once I did, I couldn't believe I hadn't thought of it earlier, because, you know, I had read her book and loved it so many years ago, and I was so obsessed with the 20s. But, you know, truly, I'm glad it wasn't my first foray into writing historical fiction, because I think it would have been just too daunting to write about not just Sylvia herself, but, you know, all of her writer friends. I mean, putting dialogue in the mouth of Ernest Hemingway and James Joyce was would have been too daunting, I think, if it had been my first try. So I'm glad it took me a little while to make my way to the Paris Bookseller.
Now, for those who don't know Sylvia Beach, tell us about Sylvia Beach. She was a daughter of missionaries, and she had spent a few years in Paris as a youth because her father was, I guess, part of the Visiting American Church. He was a pastor there. They returned to America.
Right.
But she obviously had developed a love affair with the city while she was there.
Yes, so she did. And like that's sort of the opening of my novel, right, is her memory of having been in Paris as a teenager and just absolutely falling in love with it. Her father, Sylvester, was a Presbyterian minister, and he was the head of the American church in Paris when she was a teenager. And, you know, the family returns to the United States, and they live in Princeton, New Jersey. And Sylvia is a voracious reader and also really a crusader. You know, she campaigns for women's suffrage. When war breaks out, when the First World War breaks out, she volunteers for the Red Cross. She also volunteers to till the fields in France while the men are off, you know, fighting on the front lines. she's really, you know, a person who looks for adventure in her life. And in fact, that's one of the things that she mentions in her own memoir, that being in Paris and opening Shakespeare and Company at the end of the First World War was an adventure. And so that was sort of a spirit that I kind of tried to build into her character and into my representation of her life.
Now, originally, she wanted to, I guess she wanted to make a French language bookstore in America.
Right. Yes. So that's sort of an interesting piece of her story, which was in 1917, she's in France. She's doing some writing. She's writing about the plight of women in Spain, actually, during this revolution there, or the early stages of it. And she wanders into this bookstore in the Left Bank on the Rue de l'Odéon called La Maison des Amis de Livres, the House of the Friends of Books, owned by a French woman named Adrienne Monnier. And so Adrienne had opened her store, which was a French language bookstore and lending library, in 1915, so during the war, in the thick of the war, and she was one of the very first female bookstore owners in all of France. And Sylvia goes to the store and just absolutely falls in love with the store and with the life, living the life of a bookseller. And you're right, it originally occurs to her to open a French language bookstore and lending library in New York. But because with the idea of sort of attracting French, you know, Francophiles in America and, you know, French language scholars and other people who speak French and are interested in French literature in New York. But as has been true and time immemorial, it seems, and is still true now, the rents in New York were too high. She could not afford to open such a bookstore in New York. And thank goodness, because she quickly realized that actually maybe it would be a better idea to open an English language bookstore and lending library near Adrienne's store in Paris. Because one of the things she discovered through Adrienne's store was that the French writers and intellectuals at this time period were really hungry to read more books in English, in the original language. But those books were really hard to come by in France at this time. And so her original kind of idea for Shakespeare and Company was really to fulfill this need in the French intellectual community. But of course, what wound up happening was it wound up attracting all of these, you know, expatriating American and British writers who were coming to Paris to live and write during the 20s.
Tell us a little bit about Shakespeare and Company. Was it a salon-like atmosphere, or was it more like a bookstore where basically writers would hang out during the day, talk and drink among each other, or what exactly?
Well, I think that, you know, it was both, right? I think it absolutely had a salon-like atmosphere. James Joyce, for many, many years, was practically a daily visitor. He and Sylvia would play word games in the store and other kinds of games. Other writers came there and they would have long conversations about books and current events. Shakespeare and Company also served as a kind of a concierge to American writers who were arriving in Paris. So she had the inside scoop on help with places to stay in Paris and places to go, things to visit and see. But she also offered, I think, charmingly, sort of a post office box for itinerant writers. So writers who maybe were going to make Paris their home base, but like they were moving around to different like hostels or hotels or and they were traveling in, like, you know, Ernest Hemingway, for instance. He was always going off to ski in Switzerland for a month here, or going to the south of France for a month there. And so she would hold their mail. So Shakespeare and Company became like the permanent Paris address for a lot of these writers. So Shakespeare and Company served many purposes to many different kinds of people during this time period. And that's one of the reasons why I think everyone remembers Sylvia Beach fondly from this time period. Even Ernest Hemingway, who's, you know, notoriously sort of cantankerous, wrote his own memoir of this time period, A Movable Feast, later in his life. He said, nobody was ever nicer to me than Sylvia Beach.
Hemingway famously, quote, liberates the bookstore,
yes,
in 1944 when he comes into Paris with the Allies during,
yes,
World War II. Of course, the bookstore had already been closed for several years.
Yes. I know that's a great story. I don't actually tell
no.
that's in the author's note of my story, but it's in her memoir and it's wonderful. And so, yeah, the idea of him liberating Shakespeare and company, it's a terrific story.
But you get a sense of what that place particularly meant to him and other writers of the time. It really was.
Yes.
It was sort of a fertile place to exchange ideas, to read, hear what everyone else is doing, and it just becomes this sort of fertile ground for their own imaginations as writers.
Yeah, and you know, also we have to remember there was no internet, there were barely phones, and so people, and you had to wait, you know, sometimes a few weeks for American newspapers to reach, you know, Paris shores. And so her bookstore was also kind of a hub of information. So people would come and bring their news to Shakespeare and Company. And they would come and deposit news and receive news at Shakespeare and Company. It was almost like Instagram.
Right. And
it's sort of a necessary place also, you know, when in the early years of Shakespeare and Company was the time when James Joyce's novel Ulysses, which she ultimately published,
was being
serialized in the avant-garde literary journals of the time, most famously the Little Review that came out of New York. And it was being seized by the post office under the direction of the New York Society for the Suppression of Vice, the Vice Squad, led by John Sumner. And so there was all kinds of news associated with Ulysses at this time. But in Paris, they had to wait for this news to cross the ocean. And that sometimes there was a big lag a lot of the time in getting the news from New York. But that was a place where people could go to get the news.
My guest today is Carrie Mayer. She's a historical novelist. Her latest novel is titled The Paris Bookseller, which is the story of Sylvia Beach and Shakespeare and Company, the famous bookstore in Paris that attracted so many American expatriate writers and French writers, for that matter, during the 1920s and early 30s. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, you know, there's been plenty written about Shakespeare and Company and about Sylvia Beach and all the writers that frequented Shakespeare and Company in a historical basis. And, of course, you make this a historical novel. And I think one of the large reason is the relationship between Sylvia Beach and Adrian Monnier, the other bookseller who eventually became Sylvia Beach's lover for many years.
Yeah, you know, when Sylvia wrote her own memoir in the 50s, she doesn't talk very much about Adrian. But Adrian was such an important part of her life, you know. Adrian's own store was really, as I said earlier, you know, the inspiration for Shakespeare and Company. So Sylvia's original store opened on a little street called the Rue du Petren, which is around the corner from Adrian's store. But within 2 years, Sylvia is able to move the store, her Shakespeare and Company, across the street from Adrian's store on the Rue de l'Odéon. And that's its most famous address. It's there for the better part of two decades. And Adrienne deems their little block of Paris Odeonia, a sort of like mythical literary paradise of books, where French, anyone who wanted to read books in French could go to La Maison, and anyone who wanted to read books in English could go to Shakespeare and Company. And there was a great deal of overlap between the two. Certainly James Joyce went to both stores. Ernest Hemingway went to both stores. The French writers who began going to Adrian's store also frequented Shakespeare and Company. And, you know, later in the 30s, Jean-Paul Sartre was a great patron of Adrian's store, and his longtime romantic partner, Simone de Beauvoir, was a patron of both, although she actually favored Shakespeare and Company. She devoured American novels. So, you know, stories like that abound from this time period, and they are just really, you know, absolutely terrific. And so in addition to Odeonia as a wonderful term for this place, James Joyce called it Stratford-on-Odéon.
Well, you mentioned that the memoir probably for the 19, what is it? It was done in the early 1950s, I think.
The 50s.
Yeah.
Yep.
she's not going to mention her personal relationships. Are there diaries that gave you any sort of insight into the two's relationship, or was this something you literally had to make out of fiction?
Well,
other than the fact that it occurred.
I certainly didn't make it up. No, there are many nonfiction books now that detail their relationship. Adrienne also wrote a great deal in her life. Not all of it has been translated, but I have read most of the memoir that has been translated into English, and she writes a great deal about Sylvia, actually, but not really about their romantic relationship. If you read it without knowing that they are in a romantic relationship, you would just think that they were good friends. But it's clear that they have a really deep intellectual exchange about books and literature going on their whole lives. You know, and later they actually also engage in translating projects together. They translate T.S. Eliot's Prufrock into French, mm-hmm. and they publish it in a literary journal that Adrienne is publishing at the time. So they team up on a lot of projects, as well as owning these sort of sister stores that are across the street from each other. But because they themselves didn't really write about their romantic entanglement, that certainly gave me the space to imagine it, if you will.
And of course, in your book, there's an instant connection from the first time they meet when she walks into La Maison. And it's a really interesting part of the book that you obviously have to extrapolate. I was just wondering how much has been documented of their relationship. And I think that you wrote that in your end note that this was one of your biggest surprises, is the openness of Parisian society, at least in among the literati, about LGBTQ relationships during the early part of the 20th century.
So this was something that I really had to look up and learn a little bit about. The concept of the closet really didn't come into being until later in the 30s. So their relationship was taking place in a fundamentally different time period and mindset. And the 1920s was a time when gay culture, bars and cabarets flourished in a lot of major metropolitan cities, including New York, where it was illegal, and Berlin, and also in Paris. But I think what's important and really distinguishes Paris is that same-sex relations in Paris had been decriminalized since the time of the French Revolution. And so Paris has, for more than a century, by the time of the 20s, been really a haven for people to have the kinds of relationships that they wanted to have. Now, this was still a time of great conservatism worldwide, like we in the 21st century would regard as conservative times. But couples like Gertrude Stein and Alice Toklas, like Sylvia and Adrienne, were able to kind of live effectively married lives, as you say, in these literary circles. And it was just sort of taken for granted in a way that is hard for us to imagine today, that it was taking place 100 years ago. But it was a very different time and place. You have to really imagine that, the 50s and 60s and the 70s and 80s hadn't happened yet. And so a lot of the ideas that we have about LGBTQ life just weren't true for them in the 20s.
No. Now, the other big story that's a part of the Paris bookseller is Sylvia Beach's relationship as a publisher for James Joyce and their friendship, which is really interesting because when you read other accounts, it sounds like sometimes Sylvia got the short end of the stick. She did all the work to get Ulysses published, but it's Random House and it eventually gets it through. So it gets wide readership and he switches publishers. So how did she come to publish Ulysses? Tell us that story.
So, in those early days of Shakespeare and Company, the Ulysses is being tried in New York. And I think actually something that's important to keep in mind is that in 1921, when Ulysses is on trial, it's not actually the book or Joyce that's on trial. It is the two female publishers of the literary journal, The Little Review. And they were named Margaret Anderson and Jane Heap. And so it was them that was on trial for publishing, serializing portions of this so-called obscene novel. And they are the two that are actually convicted of publishing obscenity. And as a result, the American and British publishers who had been clamoring to actually publish the completed book withdraw all their offers. And so that is when Sylvia, at this point, James Joyce is a regular at Shakespeare and Company. So, you know, Joyce is wondering what's going to happen with his poor book, and Sylvia offers to publish it from Paris. And he immediately accepts. But then she has to figure out how to smuggle it back into the United States, as I like to say, alongside the illegal liquor, because this is prohibition. She talks about herself in her memoir as a bootlegger, you know, as a play on the word bootlegger. So she's a book smuggler. And there are some wonderful stories associated with her smuggling Ulysses back into the country, including one that has to do with Ernest Hemingway, which I won't say anything more, but there we go.
My guest today is Carrie Mayer. She is a historical novelist, and her latest book is the story of Sylvia Beach and Shakespeare and Company in Paris in the 1920s and 30s. It's titled The Paris Bookseller, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, as you did mention, the memoir does talk a lot about Beach's professional relationship and with so many writers that came through Paris in the 1920s and 30s. Who were some of the people that stood out to you that you wanted to write about in this book to give us a better insight of how they worked as a writer or how they interacted with the bookstore and Beach?
Well, you know, of course, James Joyce, right? Because, you know, after she agrees to publish Ulysses, he has to finish it. And so, you know, while he's finishing Ulysses, he is just plagued by physical problems. He's practically going blind in one of his eyes. He's really suffering physically. And he also, you know, is drinking quite a lot, you know, his whole life. And so that's a very interesting relationship that I needed to explore and wanted to explore, this sort of friendship that became a professional relationship as well, and all the complications that went along with that. The other writer that I was really excited to explore in this book was Ernest Hemingway. You know, Ernest Hemingway has gotten a lot of play in historical fiction in the last maybe 20 years, and I've enjoyed, you know, all of those books. The Paris Wife by Paula McLean is one of my absolute favorite historical novels. But I think what's different about The Paris Bookseller is that I got to take a look at Ernest Hemingway not from the perspective of a romantic partner. Sylvia Beach was, you know, partnered with Adrienne during this time. She wasn't interested in Ernest Hemingway as a romantic prospect, and neither was he interested in her. And so they had an almost more cousin or sibling-like relationship, which was really fun for me to get to write about him in that way. So that's sort of a different kind of look at Ernest Hemingway that I think usually gets out there in the world. And the third writer that I really enjoyed getting to write about was Ezra Pound, who, you know, sadly, ultimately really winds up on the wrong side of history in World War II. But during this time period, he was a young poet, and he was also working as an editor, but he was also really invested in the movement that he really felt like he was part of, this new writing, which we now call modernism, right? And he was in Paris, and he was busy trying to attract other great writers to come to Paris to be part of this movement together. And he succeeded in many ways. You know, he was an early customer of Shakespeare and Company. And one of the most charming things that I found out about him is that he was sort of an amateur carpenter. And so he would fix things around the shop, you know, as he was writing his poetry and trying to convince people to come to Paris.
Now, these writers you mentioned and many others that appear in the book, you know, there's been copious amounts of information written about every step of their whereabouts during the 1920s and 30s in Paris and other places. I'm wondering how much research you did, or did you just say, you know, I'm going to read enough to be able to write a story about them, knowing that they were in Paris at this time, or do I really go to the nth degree and figure out when they might have been in Paris? Can you talk about that? Because, I mean, every step of these writers' lives have been dissected and documented in all sorts of ways.
Exactly. I could have researched this book for the rest of my life and never written a word. And so I did. I had to be really strict with myself. And it helped that I was writing it from Sylvia's point of view, right? So what was most important to me really was being able to capture these people through her eyes. And so that actually necessarily limited my research. I felt like I had to give privilege to books that were written by and about Sylvia and the store and like letters between her and some of these characters. So that was a helpful limiting factor. But also I say this in my author's note, and I'll say it out loud on your show. Because these people's lives have been so documented in the nitty gritty, I basically made a decision that if they were in Paris at all during a particular year, I could have them walk on stage that year. the one mea culpa I really felt like I needed to actually mention in my author's note is that I actually have Hemingway appear in Paris about 6 months before he actually does. And I did that. It was sort of necessary for some things that I was trying to do with my narrative arc, but I figure six, but real Hemingway aficionados, of which there are many, would know that. Like they would be like, he wasn't in Paris at that point in the summer. He came to Paris at the end of the year. So I did feel like I had to really like put that out there and say I did that on purpose. But other less known dates, I felt like, wasn't as necessary for me to officially apologize for.
One last question, and that is, next month will be the centennial of James Joyce's first publication of Ulysses. How should we remember Sylvia Beach as a part of that momentous anniversary, which literally changed literature into modernism?
Well, we should remember her as the publisher who was brave and visionary enough to publish him, when no one else would. And so without her, we might not have this amazing novel. It was her multiple editions of Ulysses that showed the world that Ulysses was great literature and was not, in fact, obscene and could be retried as literature in order to be picked up, as you said, by Random House and published in a much larger edition later in the 30s.
The name of the book is The Paris Bookseller, telling the story of Sylvia Beach and Shakespeare and Company in Paris in the 20s and 30s. Gary, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to you.
Historical novelist Gary Mayer speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Mayer recreates the world of 1920s Paris, the lost generation writers that frequented Shakespeare and Company, and the proprietress Sylvia Beach in her new book, The Paris Bookseller. It's published by Berkeley. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.